Zion, in the imagination of our minds, we welcome our brother Carl to speak with us this evening on Psalm 48. Brother Carl.
Well, thank you, Brother Craig, and my dear brethren and sisters, and particularly this evening, my dear young people. Well, as we begin to bring our special effort to a conclusion, there really is no more fitting way than to see this evening the voices and the instruments of children and young people around the things of God. You know, we've seen the sons of Korah, haven't we, the way in which the families have stood firm with their children with them, together the singers and the players on instruments that united those families stand in service to God. You know, when we saw those children with that studied concentration on their faces as they read the same score, all in harmony, all in time, that's exactly what the Word of God requires of us. That together with our families, in service to Him, we may be united in praise to glory His name. And really this evening, we're not going to deal so much with the 48th Psalm, but to dwell upon the theme of this evening, the city of the great King. Our city, brethren and sisters. The city which will one day be capital of the world, the joy of the whole earth. And our thoughts are sobered in the fact that one day our Lord will return, and we shall all stand before Him, brethren and sisters, to give account thereof for those things that we have done, whether it be good or whether it be evil. And for the skillful questioning of the Elohim, we shall give account. By our words and our works, we shall be justified or condemned. And we pray that we, together with our families, may find an entrance into that great place, the city of the great King. We shall all stand to give account. And what a wonderful city it will be, brethren and sisters, a glorious city. A city which will be a refuge for the world. Because together mankind will seek that glorious place as it dominates the very center of life in the age to come. But there is so much to do before the city is built. In Isaiah chapter 60, which I'd like you to turn to, we have a remarkable chapter of activity and busyness in which the city and the kingdom is founded. There is a time coming when darkness shall cover the earth and gross darkness to people, and the saints will have been taken out for judgment. And there will be in this world nothing but gross darkness. We think it's pretty bad now. Just wait until the saints are withdrawn. Gross darkness shall cover the earth. And Isaiah sees in the horizon there a bright light suddenly dawning upon Zion. A magnificent light. And Isaiah says in verse 1, "Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of Yahweh is risen upon thee." And out of this gross darkness, God has decided now at last to unveil His glory in the midst. And the light becomes more intense. And this light is so intense it attracts Gentiles in verse 3, "who shall come to thy light, and kings to the brightness of thy rising." And we hope to be the Anatolia, the light that lightens the world, to give that spark of truth which will come to Zion, which will attract Gentiles. And the picture that Isaiah sees, brothers and sisters, is Israel despondent, having lost 2/3 of their children. The Holocaust of Armageddon has crushed this people, and the people are dejected. And the prophet says in verse 4, "Lift up thine eyes round about and see. All they gather themselves together, they come to thee. Thy sons shall come from far. Thy daughters shall be nursed at thy side." There is to be a revolution in Israel, a bringing back of all the sons back to the homeland, to the light that attracts them, to Zion, the light of the earth. And you know, what the prophet sees is a remarkable transformation of the Jewish people. "Then," in verse 5, "shalt thou see." You know, blindness in part has happened to the Gentiles. "But then shall they see and flow together. Thine heart shall fear." And the Hebrew word means to palpitate. Thy heart shall palpitate and be enlarged because of the abundance of the sea that shall be converted to thee. And what Isaiah is describing is the conversion of Israel as it sees Gentiles cooperating with the Jewish people and bringing them back. And their heart starts to beat faster. And when they see Gentiles who voluntarily will respond to help the Jewish people, this narrow-mindedness, this bigotry, this anti-Gentile spirit will change and their heart will be enlarged. And they will accept the Gentiles. That's the change that's coming when God starts to put a light upon Zion. And the whole of the chapter describes the reformation of that time. You see in verse 10, the sons of strangers shall build up thy walls. Their kings shall minister unto thee. There will be huge numbers of people being imported into the land to reconstruct the Jewish state, and particularly the temple, the city of the great king. There will be a feverish building activity. I mean, the building itself is a mile square with towers and parapets, steps of a glorious foundation. And God will ensure that there will be people who work and work willingly to do that. Kings shall come minister. The royal thrones of Britain and other countries shall come and work in Zion to build that place. God will, in the very building of that foundation, unite Jew and Gentile together, rich and poor, high and low, royalty and commoner. Because that's what the house stands for, the joy of the whole earth. In verse 11, the gates shall be open continually, and they shall not be shut day nor night, that men may bring unto thee the wealth of the Gentiles. You know, you imagine the activity pouring into Israel. And the ports always open, and the gates always open, as people coming in day and night, flooding into that place with wealth and materials to build that house to the glory of God. It's a wonderful scene, as God also contributes to that building. See in verse 13, the glory of Lebanon shall come unto thee, the fir tree, the pine tree, and the box together, to beautify the place of my sanctuary, and I will make the place of my feet glorious. God will contribute to the building. And where there was desolation and barrenness, limestone hills, destroyed, devastated through centuries of war, and by Armageddon itself, God will recharge that area, and he will make the place of his feet glorious. And there people will see, peering in the desert and the wilderness and the Midbar and the Negev, these enormous trees, cedars of Lebanon, alpine trees in non-alpine country. And the scent of the fir trees and the pine trees filling the whole of the atmosphere with the aroma of freshness and glory. And the springs and the water bubbling through those places to give growth and luxuriance. To make the feet, the place of my feet, glorious. Because God will put his feet there through his Son and the saints. You know, it's a glorious place. It's the joy of the whole earth. You know, we've seen magnificent scenery. But that'll be left for dead when God clothes this whole region with his brand of glory. In fact, he'll also contribute in a material sense over the page in verse 17. For brass, I, says God, will bring gold. For iron, I will bring silver. For wood, brass. And for stones, iron. How will God do that? How will he give them these materials? Well, I believe the earthquake will open rich seams and veins of gold and silver. And they'll be within easy transporting distance to bring it to the temple. And God says, I will give you that. I'll break those open and give you all of those things. And they will mine those things. Imagine a city whose facade is built with gold and silver. Glorious place. So the sun shines upon those precious metals. Symbols of faith and redemption. I will give you that, says God, to make the house absolutely glorious. You know, there will be an enormous amount of work to do You just don't have a city appearing in the middle of the earth. In Isaiah chapter 9, the prophet says concerning Messiah that of the increase of his government and peace there shall be no end upon the throne of David, to order it and to establish it with justice and judgment. And what he's saying there is that there will be order and establishing to do. We use the term organization. You think of the logistics of building and planning, coordinating, getting the resources there, and the people do the right thing according to the pattern that God has determined. Ezekiel's blueprints become the basis of that house, to order and to establish it with judgment and justice. And really, that's what we are preparing ourselves for, brethren and sisters. The work we do in ecclesial life, the contribution that we make on committees and arranging brethren's groups and Sunday school teaching, all of those things, the organization that we give to that is a preparation for the future, to order it and establish it with judgment and justice. We shouldn't take our work lightly. We shouldn't take our responsibilities lightly, brethren and sisters. They are to prepare ourselves for a worldwide organization built upon judgment and justice. It's an amazing work. And as that temple and that house, the city of the great king, will rise from the ruins of Armageddon, what a glorious place it will be. Wonderful place, a mile square. We've seen the picture this evening on the screen, with God's glory overshadowing the whole of that. Mount Zion in the middle, thrust upward, elevated for all to see. It'll be a glorious place. But you know, the atmosphere in that place will be absolutely wonderful. I'd like you to come to Isaiah chapter 4. What do you think it'll be like to tread through those courts? Well, Isaiah 4 tells us the glorious atmosphere in that place. In verse 4 of Isaiah 4, when the Lord shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion, and shall have purged the blood of Jerusalem from the midst thereof by the spirit of judgment and the spirit of burning, that's Armageddon. When God will wipe away their iniquities, the filth of the daughters of Zion. Then in verse 5, Yahweh will create upon every dwelling place of Mount Zion, and above her assemblies, as the Hebrew is, a cloud and a smoke by day, and the shining of a flaming fire by night. And there, enshrouded in the midst of God's glory, will be the temple. By day there will be a cloud shadowing around the mount, like it was in the wilderness, showing the way, leading the people. And at night, the cloud will turn into a fiery hue. And the flashing forth of this glorious manifestation will be seen at night from across the plain, where people will look to that place and see this glorious building. But the end of verse 5 tells us that above, as the Hebrew is, above all the glory shall be a defense. And the Hebrew word defense is the Hebrew word that's used of a wedding canopy. Now, isn't that interesting? Above all of this glory and this wonder and the beauty of this place, it's as though God has established a wedding canopy. What's that telling us? Well, the atmosphere in that house is so wonderful. But it's like a newly married couple, hopelessly in love with each other, appreciative of each other, deeply appreciative of the things of God. And that atmosphere, brethren and sisters, of deep appreciation and unspeakable love towards our Lord will be the atmosphere that is above the whole of the assembly. Isn't that wonderful? A continual honeymoon, as it were, for 1,000 years and beyond. That's a glorious thing to look forward to. This unity and desire that we have shall be fulfilled in a glorious way in immortality. And a tread through those courts, the chambers, with the variegated leaves across the whole of those palaces, the fellowship meals, the exposition of the word, the judgment on the thrones of David, the offering of sacrifice that we'll all be involved in, God willing, will create in that place the joy of the whole earth. You know, it's a picture that is beyond words. In Zechariah chapter 8, which I'd like you to turn to, we have a very well-known passage concerning the greatness of this place. No one is forgotten. And beyond the walls of this glorious temple will be the extension of the house, as it were. Yahweh Shema, the city of peace. Now look at the intensity of the language that God uses concerning this city. In Zechariah chapter 8, verse 2, thus saith Yahweh of armies, I am jealous for Zion with great jealousy. I was jealous for her with great fury. Now look at that language. You know, jealousy is one of the most intense emotions that mankind has. Jealousy. The attachment to some person through love and appreciation that is so intense that it brooks and counters no one else sharing that affection with that person. And God says, that's how I feel about Jerusalem. And I am returned there with great fury. The nations have dared to touch this place, and I am returned with great fury. That's how I feel about Zion. I am returned, says verse 3, and I will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth, the mountain of Yahweh of armies, the holy mountain. And thus saith Yahweh of armies. Of all of the titles that are used, it is Yahweh of armies, the God that defends people. There shall yet old men and old women dwell in the streets, the broad places of Jerusalem. Every man with his staff in his hand for very age, and the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets thereof. And if ever that conjures up a picture of absolute serenity, there it is. Grandparents. We're talking of mortals, of course. The mortal population. Grandparents, for their very age. No fear of being mugged at night. Walking through those broad places, leaning on their canes and walking through those broad places with the children circling and playing around them without fear. Because it's a city of truth and harmony and righteousness. That's our city, brethren and sisters, of which we hope to administer. You can go to that place and see that there. And people appreciative of the peace that God gives to that place. I am returned with great jealousy. It's a wonderful picture indeed, isn't it? Families together, old and young, enjoying each other's company. The old for very age. Smiles upon their faces as they watch the children, and the children carefree, because no one's going to hurt them. The truth can do that and create that atmosphere between young and old that is so wonderful indeed. It's marvellous in the eyes of God. In Psalm 48, which was read this evening, we have that picture of that wonderful place, the city of our God, the mountain of his holiness. Holiness, a word which is not understood by the world today. The difference between right and wrong, clean and unclean. It'll permeate lives and society. Because people flock there to learn of his ways. It's beautiful, says verse 2. The Hebrew word yafeh. Good, pleasant, beautiful. How much is contained in just one word? Beautiful. And people will stand in awe of the exquisite beauty of that place. the marble, the gold, the silver, the trees, the rivers, the glory, the atmosphere, beautiful. Beautiful for elevation, as the Hebrew is. It'll be exalted in people's minds. The joy of the whole earth. The city of the great king, of which the Lord quoted in Matthew concerning his destiny. The city of the great king. And what a city it will be. You know, verse 3 describes for us the real power of that place. Elohim is known in her palaces for a refuge. That's our verse. The Elohim of that verse are the future saints of which we hope to be a part. And Elohim is known there. They're not distant. They're not remote. They are known. And people will go there knowing, Benjamin, that there are people in that place who will be a refuge, who you can go to for an answer. Just because it's the kingdom age doesn't mean to say that there will no longer be problems among the mortal population. Just because it is the millennium doesn't mean to say that God will not still require the trial of faith. People will still have their problems, their tragedies and crises, their doubts and fears. When they go to that place, in those palaces, they'll find Elohim there who'll know how to give an answer because they've been through that. And the things that we do today are really preparing us for the counsel that we shall give in the future age. The advice that we give, the things that we say, the response to our brethren and sisters is a preparation for the future. And I wonder, brethren and sisters, whether people see in us a refuge, whether they can come to us confidently and easily and familiarly and say that we need help. We know you have the answer. I wonder whether people see us like that, or whether we're aloof and unapproachable and critical and negative. I wonder how people really see us, brethren and sisters. Well, these Elohim are known as a refuge. Isaiah 4, we didn't look at the last verse, says the same thing. A refuge from the storm. Life will still have its storms. People will still go to seek advice. And the Elohim are known there, in that place. It's a wonderful verse, isn't it? Wonderful verse. And the psalm describes a conducted tour of that place. You see in verse 12, the psalmist, one of the gatekeepers of the sons of Korah, the man who was used to conducting the tours around the court and explaining to the pilgrims the various spiritual lessons of the temple. He says in verse 12, walk about Zion. Go round about her. Tell the towers thereof. Mark ye well her bulwarks, consider her palaces, that ye may tell it to the generation following. Walk about Zion, compass the city, the Hebrew is. And count the towers. Why would there be the invitation to count the towers? In the future there'll only be four, one in each corner. Count the towers. Well, the tower, brethren and sisters, as we saw in one of our studies in Proverbs chapter 18, verse 10, is a symbol of refuge, the name of God. And when you go round that city, and you walk around it, and you see at the four corners, at each point of the compass in every direction, there is this refuge of God. Mark ye well her bulwarks. The Hebrew is set your heart upon the fortifications. You look at a city today, and they all have their fortifications, their naval bases, and their air force bases, and their army bases. But where is the defences of this place? There are none visible. But you see, God is the wall around that place. He is the defence. And you need the eye of faith to see that. Set your heart upon the defence of that place. Consider well her palaces. That's an interesting expression. The word palaces there means the innermost personal room of the king. You take a conducted tour today of Buckingham Palace or those great places, and there are certain places which are cordoned off, the innermost parts of the royalty lives there, not permitted to go through those parts. They're private. But in this place, there will be the invitation to pass into the innermost personal rooms of the king. Because people will be invited into the innermost recesses of fellowship with their God. The closest of fellowship, in the most personal room of the king, is a symbol of the most intimate fellowship with the king himself. And people will be invited to have fellowship in the most closest possible fashion. And people will feel satisfied. Their sins will be forgiven. Their sacrifices accepted. And they will feel close to God because his manifestation is there in that city. It's a very personal thing. That you may tell it, says the psalmist, to the generation following. As the people come back to their respective towns to tell their children and their children's children of what they've seen and the lessons they've learned and all of the examples and the lessons of that place built into the whole structure of the place, the circles and the arches and the palm trees and the cherubim, and their children being instructed in all of those things, the generation following. How can we arrive at this glorious place? It's our city, we hope. How are we going to get there? Well, in Psalm 15, which is our concluding quotation, this is how we get there. And the question, the very penetrating question is asked, Yahweh, who shall abide in thy tent? That's interesting. The house of God at the future age is a tent. Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? And there's the issue. Who of us are going to be there? What are the qualifications for citizenship in that glorious city? He that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness and speaketh the truth in his heart. How comprehensive is that? Walking, working and speaking doesn't leave much else, does it? And there is an uprightness about this walk. There's integrity about this brother and sister. That is obvious to all. Integrity. Honesty. Those are the qualifications of those who dwell in this holy hill. And when they speak the truth in their heart. It's not just a formality of words. It's not a defense that clothes the mind. It is from the heart. It is genuine and honest and sincere. And they're working and busy. They're doing things. They're not hearers only. They're doing. And they're the kind of people in verse 3 who don't backbite, nor do evil, nor reproach others in the meeting. And now it comes a little closer to home, doesn't it? Backbiting, doing evil, and reproaching. If we manifest those qualities, brothers and sisters, we will not be in the company of the redeemed. That's what Psalm 15 is saying. We will not be in the company of the redeemed. There is no place in that group of Elohim which is so united in the things of God for whispering and backbiting and doing evil and taking a reproach. No place at all. In verse 4, in whose eyes a vile person is contemned. The person who's wicked, those outside in the world. Whose wickedness is obvious. There is no collusion with that kind of evil. But he honours them that fear Yahweh. He honours other brethren and sisters. He may not agree with them in some small point, but he honours them. Because they fear Yahweh. That's a glorious thing. To honour each other. Paul said in Philippians that we should count others worthy of more honour. Those are the qualifications of the fraternity of that new race of Elohim. He that swears to his own hurt and changes not. When he says he'll do something, he'll do it. And when it hurts, when it's inconvenient, he will do it because he's promised that. His word is his bond. He that putteth not out his money to usury, nor takes reward against the innocent, doesn't take advantage of others. He helps them instead. And those that do these things shall never be moved. There'll be pillars in the temple of God. Never be moved. It's a glorious city. It's a wonderful atmosphere. It's our city, brethren and sisters. But we all have to ask that question, who shall abide in that tabernacle and who shall dwell in that holy hill? It's time to take stock. And as we sing this evening the praises to our God in unity and glory, as the mind is elevated to the greatness of that time, let's dwell upon these lessons. God has in store for us a wonderful city, the joy of the whole earth. But let's understand its privileges and responsibilities. And let's now, brethren and sisters, be citizens of Zion in sincerity and in truth.
Our next item, brethren and sisters, is to again to be rendered by the orchestra. And just